This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking gardens and landscaping and more today. It's the time of year where our attention turns to spring. So what are you planning to grow this season? We got lots of tips and advice just ahead. Joining Cincinnati Edition today are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, and Ohio State University Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology and Ohio State Extension Agent for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs. Welcome to you all.
Awesome to be here.
Glad to be here.
And for all of you listening, I know you may have some comments or some questions about your own household plants, your yard, your farm, your trees, and more. So be sure to give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be looking for your comments and your tweets throughout the show and may be able to include some of those in this broadcast. So welcome again. This is my first time hosting our monthly gardening show, as we call it, in the producer's room. And I was a little nervous because I don't know a whole lot about gardening.
I don't either.
Neither do we.
Yeah.
We
don't say that on the air. I just advertised you as an expert, I'm going to need your help. So I was telling the guys before we started that this was going to be a difficult show for me because, look, I've tried. Like, I'm a single guy. I'm a bachelor. Live alone in an apartment in downtown Covington. So it's an urban environment. So I'm not doing a lot of gardening or landscaping. But I thought, I'm going to get some plants. And so I headed out to one of the big stores and bought four plants. Currently, half of one of the plants is alive. So
that's not bad.
That's one eighth.
Yeah.
So I guess let's start with that because it's spring is just around the corner. For those of us who are thinking about just the simple aspect of gardening, keeping a plant alive in your house, what's the right kind of plant to be buying right now to be putting in the house?
I mean, I recommend for people such as yourselves that don't have a lot of time or maybe not a lot of knowledge, a pothos is wonderfully easy to take care of. It's very drought tolerant. I've ignored my pothos for 2 weeks at a time. The leaves will droop a little bit, give it some water, peps right back up. Doesn't need a whole lot of sunlight. Very, very easy plant.
It's called a pothos?
A pothos. It's a great starter plant.
Very aggressive. Just don't set it next to a chair because, you know, they'll just kind of twirl right around your neck
wrapped up. It's a spiraling plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Great vine.
Okay.
Yeah. And I like we were talking before the show that, you know, I garden and I really hope this doesn't bite me in my rear end, but I like plants that are low maintenance.
Oh, that's, you know, no,
yeah.
That's all of
so,
us.
And that philosophy throughout my life actually is, you know, low maintenance. And so succulents for me are very, you know, successful. I just forget about them, you know, just put them in the corner. A month went by, maybe 2 months. Oh, I'll sprinkle you with a little bit of water. So understanding where they come from, you know, and understanding kind of mimicking their environment will make you successful. And also, sorry, I can get a little tangent, but the right container is very important as well.
Hugely. See, that's the type of advice that somebody like me needs is, you know, is this the right pot? Is this the right dirt, soil, whatever? Are there nutrients that I need to put into this thing?
Yeah, so sometimes the pretty pots, they don't always have the environment that we need, which is drainage holes. So we either have to do it ourselves. Sometimes they have little, inserts where you can actually poke it out yourself, or you actually have to get like a clay drill bit and actually do it yourself. So,
oh my gosh.
Oh, I know.
A tool.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's easy. It's easy because she mentions that. I really like what Sarah just said. These clay pots, you know, they're not very expensive. They look nice. They, you know, they age nicely. You get a lot of things on the outside. It adds interest. But they always, almost always have, unless you get one that's highly decorated. You're exactly right, which I was so disappointed. You have to have drainage.
Yeah.
The other thing is lighting. Now, he mentioned pothos, which is an understory vine where it's native too. So you can have it back in the room. But do you have windows that get a lot of light?
I have two lovely windows.
Outstanding.
Oh, perfect.
South-facing is optimal.
Yeah. Mine faces north. Now, one of the scary parts about my windows is right around when the sun starts to go down in the middle of the afternoon, when it starts to make its descent, it cooks my apartment. So, like, sometimes if I'm home, like on the weekends, I have to close the curtains.
Succulents.
Okay. Let me talk about the plant that I bought that I loved. Okay. And then you can tell me where I went wrong because I want to get another one and I don't want it to know what happened before.
Yeah.
I bought
it's
a,
not listening, is it?
I mean, yeah. I hope not. I don't know. You never know anymore. It was a weeping pussy willow.
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it kind of droops over
for
and has
an
these lovely.
Plant.
It was advertised as an indoor plant. I had no way to verify.
Yeah, I don't
know. And it was a lovely plant. Mm-hmm. Now, I had it in the window, and perhaps that was wrong because it did not last very long. Let's just say it wept hard all over the place. It was a very sad, sad plant. And I also didn't know about the watering situation. Like maybe I overwatered, right?
That's the number one
that
mistake.
That's exactly
Sarah's
okay,
right. Well, let's talk about that because if you've got indoor plants, they're not as thirsty as you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like what Joshua said, the best thing. You look at the plant, you know, and some plants tell you when they need to be watered, and that's the trigger. If it's starting to, you know, you're starting to see, but also your finger, it's kind of a finger test, you know, mm-hmm. you just simply put your finger in the soil if it's dry and don't water until they dry. We typically, the major problem, and Sarah knows this with extension because we get these calls all the time, killing with kindness. Mm-hmm. You know, you think that, well, I didn't water since yesterday. And no, you know, really in a house plant, about once a week in the winter.
Really?
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday. That's what we do. We water every plant in the house every Sunday, and we don't think about it after that.
Is there anything to, like, just touching the dirt and checking if there's moisture or if it's...
Well, get down there fairly, you know, deep. You know, I usually use my index finger.
Okay.
And then, you know, when you water, don't water the millimeter, you know, let it drain all the way through, especially depending upon the root ball or the size of your container. You want that whole environment moist. I know. See, this is where we get a little kind of dorky and like really into the soil.
It is very important. I think there are a lot of people who don't want to kill the plants they buy. I'm not a plant murderer. I didn't mean to kill these plants.
Herbicidal.
I want to keep this alive. I've managed to keep half of the money tree alive.
Oh.
And I bought the money tree because of what it was called. I'm a visualizer, so I like to visualize things. Like, well, I'll think about money when this thing is in my life. And so it's doing fine. But I was overwatering it at first.
There
and so now
go.
Like I have half of it. I guess if half of it looks dead, it's not coming back.
Money tree is jade, correct?
Ooh.
Is that a jade plant?
Ooh.
I don't know. I was thinking something entirely different.
You stumped us.
We need the music to play.
Well, we'll see if we can research that at our first commercial. But first let's go to the phones. We're getting some calls. So Jeffrey's on the line. Jeffrey, how are you? Do we have Jeffrey?
Yes, hello.
Hey, Jeffrey, what's your question?
So my wife and I have a 10-foot by 20-foot plot of the yard that we want to plant some bee-friendly native flowers, like flowers native to Ohio in there. And I was just wondering if your guests have any suggestions for flowers that bees love but won't grow too much as far as getting too big or spreading out too much in numbers.
Awesome question, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Well, funny that you mentioned because, Joe will, I think, is going to talk a little bit about invasive week. Are you going to talk about the invasive species?
Yeah.
But the extension, both University of Kentucky and the Ohio State University extension has plethora information of, you know, horticultural plants for the landscape. And also Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens, they have all kinds of information. So I would start there, a laundry list. And again, you can have our email address on the website. So send us an email and I'll be glad to send you publication after publication. And it's also sometimes it can be challenging. Then you take those publications and information and go to either the box stores and or some of your local nurseries. And then some of our home gardeners get a little upset because they can't find certain plant material locally here. So just be mindful of that. And, you know, just don't go to one nursery. Just try to maybe travel around or call us or send me an email and I can give you maybe a few recommendations of where to buy.
There's also another, and of course, later on, we're going to hear, I think, from Scott Berline from Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden.
We are indeed.
And you know, I'm a person that likes to see things in real life before buying them. I mean, you know, the catalogs are going to make everything look great. But, and the other point is, you mentioned a very good point. I'm assuming you're in southern Ohio. Is that correct?
Oh, I'm sorry. He's off the line.
Oh, he's off the line. Yes. Okay. I think he said Ohio. It doesn't matter. Tri-state area. If you go to the Cincinnati Zoo Botanical Garden, and particularly early in the season, but just watch what they're planting, they have a strong dedication to pollinator gardens, mm-hmm. pollinator plants, and they have them labeled, which is very important. The other point there, too, is that folks at the zoo are also involved in assessing plants, whether they are invasive or not. And this is, you know, National Invasive Species Awareness Week, which is something we take very seriously with our Asian longhorn beetle situation in Claremont County. So you don't want to go down the wrong road by purchasing something elsewhere. You know, you go look at the catalog, oh, boy, this looks fantastic. But then you find that in greater Cincinnati, it may not behave as well. I would urge strongly, first visit the Cincinnati Zoo Botanical Garden website. They are posting these things now. They have a major pollinator effort going right now. Secondly, as the season progresses, visit and take notes. And then you can see what works in terms of boundaries, color, and size.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about them being native, but I love herbs for pollinator gardens.
Oh, yeah.
The smell of those essential oils drives, they say it's 33% more pollinators to your garden, and it's double use. You can use them in your kitchen as well. And most of them, they spread, but they don't spread crazy rapidly. Mint is outside of that group. I don't recommend planting mint in your garden. It's going to take off.
Yeah.
And which mint? Mountain mint's a great one.
Oh, mountain mint. Mountain mint. Oh, the bees, the pollinators love that. And think about, too, just when you say pollinators, you know, there is a wonderful poster of all pollinators. I'm sure you can find different ones of those. But don't think of just our bumblebee or honeybee. There are other pollinators that are beautiful and even microscopic that we can't see with our naked eye that plants will attract these into our environment. So not only I would recommend getting information about plant material, but also getting the insects that are going to be invited to your landscape. And it's kind of fun to see what, you know, comes into your landscape.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to weigh in, we continue with our full hour of gardening talk. After this short break, you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's the gardening show. So here to share tips and perspective are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoltz, Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, and Ohio State University Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology and Ohio State Extension Agent for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs. Thanks to you all for being here, and thanks to everyone who's calling 513-419-7100 if you'd like to weigh in, or email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets. Let's go to Paul. Paul, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a planner, not a planter, but a planner. And I like to kind of plan out what's going to go where in my garden, and I believe in, you know, native plants. But I have a really hard time finding lists of the appropriate plants to place in the appropriate areas. I mean, I think I might have found some at Ohio State, but it would be really helpful to know if there were any resources that kind of laid out, you know, what sort of native plants work well in different areas under different lights, different conditions.
So where are you, Paul?
I'm in Cincinnati.
Okay, in the city proper?
Yes.
Okay.
Anderson.
Thank you, Paul. We'll let our experts weigh in. Thanks for the call.
So first, there's not one answer, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I still have struggles in my yard as the landscape changes for various reasons. So one is always continuously doing research. That's one reason why I love my job, is it's ongoing. It keeps growing. And so, sorry, guys. Sorry. And so, you know, going to the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanic Garden, our garden in Campbell County at the Extension Office and other various places. And, of course, we do have, UK has, and I don't know if the Ohio State has, we have different publications for, like, the wet site, dry site, sunny, right. Shade, all those different types of ecosystems, we have those, but that, you know, again, that's just the beginning or the backbones of your research, in my opinion. And just, you know, we're still researching different plant combinations in sunny locations that we started 2 years ago. And I know the zoo is ongoing of their research in plant combinations and diversification of their plant plantings. So as a planner, it kind of gets overwhelming. Mm-hmm, but to me, that's the joy and the fun of it, is that, you know, your neighbor's tree comes down. Well, now your whole ecosystem has changed. So now what are you going to do? So.
Well, and the other thing, too, and I like what you said, Sarah, you know, referencing the idea that there is not one place to go. But I go back again to visiting is one of the best things. I mm-hmm. thought you were going to mention a Kentucky Arboretum, for example, down Lexington. Now, that, yes. you know, you might think that's a bit of a drive. If you want to go closer, the Boone County Arboretum, mm-hmm. just, I mean, it's a jewel. And, of course, we have other places. We mentioned the zoo, Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum. You know, all these places. I know I'm going to forget many. But online, for example, you know, we keep referencing the zoo. I think Steve Foltz, director of horticulture, has been on here before, and he's developed a website for years and still does called Plant Places. So if you just type that in a Google search, Plant Places, and what you see listed are primarily trees and shrubs, but there are some other plants as well. These are also specific to Greater Cincinnati. So these are plants that have been tried and true here, which is nice. And then he also has them divided up by different things, like different needs and also, you know, different appearances. So as a planner, that's not a bad place to go. Mm-hmm. But again, get in the car. I do have to tell you that. I mean, the Kentucky Arboretum in Lexington, for trees in particular, they have a fantastic oak collection. And we've been really starting to work a lot of native oaks into our landscaping. But you don't want to get too carried away. Some get really huge. Some don't. Those are fantastic sites to visit and then take notes, get ideas. And as a planner, and I know my colleagues here will say the same, always think two or three seasons ahead. The upcoming season, sometimes people, oh gosh, spring is around the corner. I have to do something right now. And of course, in fall, you realize, well, I made a big mistake. And then next year it just gets worse, you know, mm-hmm. because of plant, you know. So take your time. Research it. Put a few things in. Don't be afraid to take things out. I like what Sarah said. If things have changed, you had a lot of shade plants because you had big trees. One dies. Now, all of a sudden, you need plants for sunny locations. But we do have a lot of resources. You just have to take your time to find them and take those notes.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Stephanie on the line. Stephanie, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. And so is the panel. We want to hear your question.
Perfect. Well, I do live in Cincinnati proper, and in the summer of 2017, I was gifted a variety of succulents, so I was excited when I heard somebody mention, ooh, succulents. But to be honest with you, I'm a little uncertain as to how to care for it. So I know, and I'm going to botch the pronunciation, I know it's a however we say those words.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I know it's a variety of that. It was gifted to me in a quart-sized pot. I keep it outside in the summer. I bring it inside over the last two winters. And what I've noticed is that as it grows tall, it drops the lower leaves, mm-hmm. leaving a taller stalk. And now that I've got visibility at the base, I can see these two smaller little baby plants that have emerged, and, you know, I'd like to know, can I separate them? If so, how, when, and then just generally, what type of soil and care do they need, you know, compared to like a typical houseplant?
Awesome question, Stephanie. Thank you. We'll hang you up and let you listen.
I guess that's a multi-part question. As far as the care for it, I water my succulents once every 2 to 3 weeks, ensuring that they're dried out completely in between waterings. They are, you know, from arid climates typically. They like to be really nice and dry for your soil requirements. I would recommend, if you are repotting it, have a sandier loam mix, something that's going to dry out really quickly. And then as far as your pups, which is what the small newer plants are called, they can either be a root that has popped up into a new plant, or it could actually be one of those leaves that have dropped off. They actually have some meristematic tissue in there that will root and then in turn grow its own plants. So when I would transplant those, is I would wait till it has at least a few leaves on it. That way it's going to be an indication that the root system is big enough to actually take out and repot into a plant. But the most important things are let it dry out between waterings, and having a sandier soil mix, I think, is really important.
We've got some comments to share, and this, I think, sounds a little sadder than me killing that weeping pussy willow. So our listener, Hannah, has a cactus. She put it outside last summer. She says it contracted something, and now it's leaking black fluid and losing its arms. What are your thoughts on this horror movie of a plant?
This is the commiseration channel.
The only thing I can think of are sometimes maybe Joe Boggs, you can chime in more on this, is they do get scale. I've recently, a lot of my succulents and some of my ferns get scale. And sometimes during their generations, they will produce their feces, which is sooty mold, that looks kind of blackish shiny. And it does kind of look like a horror movie if there's abundance of it. And so me, typically, I'll just literally give it a shower, either outside or in my bathtub. Not too hard, but not too soft, so just right. And really massage those leaves, too, especially on my ferns. They get some soft body scale. And so that's what I think it might be that.
Can you massage a cactus?
I was going to say, you might want to use a brush of some sort.
That's the only thing that I can think of is like sooty mold.
But. Well, it those would need to be eliminated. You're right. I think, you know, not just the scales, both hard and soft scales. Hard scales actually don't produce honeydews, but mealy bugs would be another option, too.
Yes.
I mean, that's a...
Yep.
But then this other problem, and it sounded a little bit more like you could be dealing with a disease issue. And there are some pretty devastating systemic diseases that can occur in cacti. I think what I would do is recommend what people recommend that we do all the time, and that is seek some professional help.
And unrelated to the
plant. Yes, that's right. And I think what you ought to do before embarking too much further is to take it to a garden center, to an extension office, take it someplace. Garden centers, particularly garden centers that know about cacti, and we have a lot of great horticulture professionals here that do, take it in and see what they say, because, you know, Sarah's exactly right. We do have these different sucking insects, but, you know, if you start treating for them and it turns out to be a disease— Well, you could make things worse, and vice versa.
So no chance that it's oil. She's not struck oil in this case.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, that'd be... I'm getting clear right. here.
Our listener, Richard, wants to know how to control, and I may... this is a word that you've got, Joe, in one of your lists that we're going to go over. Celandine, celandine, celandin?
Lesser celandine.
Okay, lesser. Celandine then. Okay,
yeah.
So Richard is asking about how to control celandine and Siberian cilia that is overrunning his yard.
Wow, the cilia is an interesting thing.
And we're going to talk about it coming up in our chat about invasive plant species, so this is a good chance to do that.
Yeah, lesser celandine or ranunculus, and are there other names somebody can't say on the air, has really started taking over. And now, it's called a spring ephemeral. I love that name. I don't know why.
It does sound great.
You can,
it's terrible, though.
Yeah, if you hate the plant, you can still say, oh, no, it's a spring ephemeral. That means that the plant's very apparent in the spring. In fact, it's growing right now. It then just, you know, covers everything. Then you get these, frankly, beautiful. I mean, mm-hmm. It was brought in as an ornamental, beautiful buttercup-like flowers, which gives rise. It's not a buttercup. It's not even closely related, but gives rise to other common names with buttercup in there. But the problem is it is hugely invasive. There's just not much that compete against it. So we have other native spring ephemerals that we would really like to do well. Now, at this time of the year, I don't know if he says if he's in a landscaping, turf grass.
That's all the comment I've got.
Okay. If it's in a wooded area, then at this time of year, he may want to start making applications. A Roundup can work well. Be very careful. We do have some other native spring ephemerals that are starting to emerge, but that's a very clear option. Now, with the concerns of a Roundup, I want to glyphosate. I do want to stress something, and that is that I do a lot of teaching with industrial vegetation management. These are professionals who make these applications. On every label, there's this thing called PPE, professional protection, personal protection equipment, PPE. It's not on a lot of homeowner labels, so let's use some common sense. If you're going to use Roundup or any other herbicide or any other pesticide, wear gloves for crying out loud. Just protect yourself.
Organic or synthetic?
Yeah, good for you. That's exactly right. Even vinegar can. Mm-hmm. So the point of it is you can make these applications now. You're not going to take it out in one fell swoop. Now, later on, if it's in turf grass, you can start using some of the turf grass herbicides. But again, not one fell swoop. You're probably going to take more than one application over time because these plants very quickly produce these little structures that allow it then to survive. They're little potato-like structures, both on the stems and in the soil. And that's how they reappear next year. So you kind of have to wear the plant down. But it's perfect to be getting started very soon, right now, actually, in a wooded area.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. It's our gardening show. Give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email talk@wvxu.org if you have questions or comments about the plants in your life. Do you guys want to hear about some more monstrous tales from our listeners and see if you can help? Let's see. Well, see, yesterday we talked about killing coyotes and whether that was illegal, and now we've got to talk about another animal. This has been a very traumatic week for all of us at Cincinnati Edition. So Jennifer wants to know how to control or get rid of moles.
Well, moles, they're carnivorous. So the great thing about moles is they're not actually eating the roots of our plants. Voles, on the other hand, those are the ones that we really worry about. I often think of in grass, moles are bad, but in a landscape or a garden, they're actually really good. They're aerating. They are
eating pests.
They're eating pests, and then they're depositing fertilizer. So in a landscape or a garden, I really prefer to have moles. I actually have moles in my own lawn, though. So there, we found a very nice control method. It's a solar-powered stake that you stick in the ground, and it sends out some sort of buzz, some sort of, I don't know, field, electric field, or either a sound
like a
that they don't, yeah, some sort of vibration, and it drives them off. Now my neighbor has moles, but I don't have any moles. So
yeah,
that's
fine.
Good.
That's working.
Yeah, it's working. I bought one thinking like, hey, I'll give it a shot. We'll see if it works. I didn't expect it to work. And then I saw that they went from my backyard to my front yard. So now I have one in my backyard, one in my front yard. And now my neighbor has the same devices because I drove all the moles to his.
Yeah.
And we just picked it up at Home Depot. I can't remember the name of it, but that works really well. There are some pesticides that you can use and poisons that you can use. And there are also traps. Traps, I think, are the way to go.
And you have to think of moles. And again, I want to go back to voles because they're also becoming quite an issue right now, particularly under the snow cover. So you might have vole, V-O-L-E, runs. And you can see those above ground, and they had been below the snow. But if you have moles, think of them as tiny lions because they are carnivorous. They're very territorial. And so typically you get a lot of what are called feeding runs. They only use it one time. And then you get runs, these runs below ground that is their main highways. So you have to find out which one is which. And frankly, because they're territorial, even though they do have some value, I like what you said. I really liked your approach on that, Joshua. But even though they have some value, they can be pretty destructive in turf grass. And the easiest approach is to use traps, but you have to locate which one of those runs are using for just a highway. To do that, go out in the evening and just stomp them down. And then the next day, whichever run is heaved up again, that might be the highway. But I always recommend 2 days in a row. And then if you find the third day, they're risen up, that's where you put your trap. But read and follow those trap directions very closely. Mm-hmm. They're kind of hard to use. Moles are much smarter than you might imagine. And so you do have to follow those directions to get a good result.
I think those vibrating yardsticks are going to cause quite an awkward block party over in Josh's neighborhood. So.
They are.
Now they know, too. That's
all right. let's go back to the phones. We've got Tony on the line. Tony, what's your question? Hey, do we have Tony?
Yes. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
Okay.
Thanks for calling. What's your question?
I've got a question about tulips. I've got some volunteer tulips that have been coming up next to my house for at least 5 years, unattended. And it's kind of clay soil, and it's wondered, and they spread every year. They grow a larger patch. Is there something I should do or can do to help them out?
Great question, Tony. We'll hang up and let the experts speak. We got about a minute before we need to take a break.
So just keep them. I mean, tulips are great. And I believe you did say tulips.
You did.
Okay. Yeah, just keep them.
They seem to be doing well.
They seem to be doing well.
I'd love to see that.
I kind of envy you because I live in an area where there's deer. And so I bring my tulips inside and force them inside because I can't enjoy them outside. So kudos to you. And you might divide them every so often. If you start seeing that their blooms are decreasing, but if you don't need to fertilize them, don't start it. You know, there's no reason to do anything. Let the foliage completely yellow out so all that energy and food source goes right back into the bulb for the following year, and then cut off that foliage, put it in your compost if you have it.
Nice work. So Tony is doing a good job.
Yeah.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue our conversation with our panel of gardening experts in just a moment. But first, joining us on the phone is Cincinnati Zoo horticulturalist Scott Berline. Scott, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
The folks on our panel have given some nice shout-outs to the zoo and all the resources that you have out there. And upcoming on March 14th is the Urban Landscape Symposium. What is it?
Well, it's a full day of talks. This is probably, I think it's the eighth year we've had this symposium. And it's all about sustainable urban landscapes. You've kind of touched on a number of the themes in the program already, but a lot about pollinators, a lot about the healthful effects of gardening on people, and some how-to instruction from some people that some speakers that really know what they're doing.
So if you're a newbie to this type of event, what's going to strike these newcomers checking this out?
The intensity. It's seven classes of about an hour each, and these people are passionate about what their life is about, what their career is about, and it'll take us to a whole nother level with of knowledge and passion.
What's new in sustainability as it relates to urban landscapes?
Well, more and more we're finding that there's a huge association of human health and well-being and community when, especially in urban situations, when there's more and better landscape, horticulture and landscaping.
All right. What does that mean exactly for somebody who doesn't
well,
know?
For instance, our first speaker is Dr. Aruni Bhatnagar from the University of Louisville. And Louisville has a huge problem with heat island effect, which means because of the big urban environment and a lack of trees, Louisville gets much hotter than it should in the summertime. And so Dr. Bhatnagar has been studying that to find how that affects people's health. He's also been studying particulate matter in the air for people near roadsides, how that affects cardiovascular health. So he's finding that people that live near freeways and other places with a lot of heavy particulate pollution suffer a lot more disease than people who don't. And they're now looking at the role trees have in capturing that particulate matter and getting it out of the air.
Well, this sounds like a pretty fun-filled day of educational opportunities for people. So it's March 14th. What's the time?
We open the doors about 8 o'clock. First speaker starts at 9, and we go until 4:45 or 4:50.
How many people come to this?
We have been selling them out. So usually about 275.
Okay. And if they sell out, people will want to get there in advance. So we'll have more information on the Urban Landscape Symposium at the Cincinnati Zoo on March 14th. Find that at WVXU.org. Scott, thanks for taking some time to join us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate being on.
We'll talk to you again soon. So let's continue now with our gardening experts, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, Ohio State University Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology, and Ohio State Extension Agent for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs. Thanks for sticking around. If you want to join the conversation, 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org, Facebook and Twitter. Twitter will work as well. Let's go back to the phones. We have Dottie waiting on the line. Dottie, what's going on in your world?
Hello. I am actually very conflicted about what to do about my lawn. Can you hear me?
I sure can, Dottie. We're hearing about your lawn.
Great. So, you know, I'm reading all about the insects dying off and the horror of pesticides and all of that, but I've had a True Green like company come regularly and treat my lawn, both with fertilizers and with pesticides. And I'm wondering, what are my options and how do I keep my lawn looking reasonable without using pesticides?
Great question, Dottie. We'll hang up and let the experts answer.
So first, with any type of landscape, and I meant to say this with container gardening and gardening as a whole, is making sure you get your soil tested to understand the environment and the nutrients that are there or lacking thereof for a particular plant. And so lawns are tricky because they're a monoculture, meaning you're trying to raise or care for one particular type of species. And most home lawn turf is a fescue blend. And yes, it is very tricky unless you are on a golf course and you can have or potentially have the budget to manicure that landscape at a high level, if that is your image. And it is going to be very challenging to do that. Though, if you're a homeowner and you want kind of a middle grade management, because it is a monoculture, there will be tricks to that. There will be weeds. There will be pests. But as Joe and Joshua have mentioned, we need to identify what those threats are and proper diagnosis of those threats, it be weeds or insects or whatever it may be.
So. Well, you know, the nice thing about turf grass is it can be a strong competitor. And I contend, and actually University of Kentucky and Ohio State and Purdue, you know, our three land grants, great turf grass programs, and all of the professionals there will tell you the same thing. If you have a very thick stand of turf grass, it can outcompete weeds, so you can reduce herbicide use. If you select the right turf grass, and if it says, for example, and tall fescue, turf type tall fescue, we have some that the fancy word is endophytic fungi. These are fungi that actually produce alkaloid materials that kill insects. And so if you look on the seed bag and it says resistant to insects, most likely that's the case. Start working those types in. Sarah's exactly right, though. And that is, you know, soil tests so you can see what the nutrient needs are. Mow high so it doesn't die. That's a saying that we have. Mow as high as that mower will go because that has a direct correlation to root growth. And then if you have tall fescue or even Kentucky bluegrass and the lawn is a bit aged out. Now, of course, this doesn't apply to us, but it does to turf grass. If the lawn's getting a little bit long in the tooth, it doesn't hurt to introduce new grass seed. The best time to do it is in late summer to early fall, but, you know, you could even do it now. You could even do it in the spring. It may not do as well, but it's still a good start because you want to thicken up that turf grass. But I do want to leave one last thing. I'm surprised that Sarah didn't say this. There's a saying that turf grass is the canvas upon which we paint the rest of the landscape. So if you have a large area of turf grass, you may want to step back and say, you know, I have a lot of really great plant design opportunities. So you're squeezing down the turf grass and then enjoying your landscape in a different way.
That was going to be my recommendation, is pull back on the lawn and start adding things. You can add fruit trees with wonderful guilds underneath that are going to have multiple species.
Fantastic.
And you're going to start introducing some biodiversity, which is going to help on diseases and other pests that will be kind of feeding on your lawn.
So what about herbs?
Herbs are great. Again, I'm a strong proponent of herbs. They bring so many things to not only our landscape, but also our kitchen. I think thyme, oregano, sage, they're
parsley.
All very hardy plants. And they, if you do not harvest them, they will flower and they do bring a lot of beauty to your yard as well.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We've got Tommy waiting on the line. Tommy, what's going on?
Hello, friends of gardeners. I used a blower to blow the leaves from my yard onto my flower beds, and now I'm concerned that as they pile up, that they may be rotting out the perennials. Is that should I be concerned?
All right.
No. I mean, unless you have a mountain like 10 foot tall or something, which would be kind of fun to go play and jump in. But no, I had the same situation. You know, they're kind of slimy right now, and they look, you know, really, you know, brown. But that's a good thing because they're biodegrading down, mm-hmm. and you know, time and time again, as you do that, a few inches. You know, I'm not saying like pile it on. But, you know, that will add nutrients and organic matter right back into your soil.
And you may want to think about a mulching mower, or if you don't already have one. And maybe you do, but we tend to forget that those leaves came from someplace. And so returning the leaves to the soil under the tree where they came from is what the tree had in mind in the first place. So if you use a mulching mower, that will grind them down, make them very small, then they return to the soil beneath that tree and return nutrients and things required by the tree.
So should he remove the leaves before spring, or will the plants break through?
I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think they'll be fine. Unless, like Sarah said, they're more than, I'd say, 3 or 4 inches. And I think that's the upper extreme. But a couple of inches, I think it's free mulch. It's going to retain water for your plants when it gets nice and dry. I would leave them there.
Okay, we've got a lot of questions and comments coming in through our inbox. So we've only got a few minutes left, so we'll do some rapid fire as best we can to see if we can blow it through. I'd love to be able to answer everybody who was so cool to listen to us today. Quickly, Rob wants to know, best way to kill lilies of the valley?
Move. There's
no way to do it.
It's really difficult. And if you do call on a professional, then they might use an herbicide that they have to be, they'll know what to do, but have to be very careful because it's highly volatile. It's actually 2,4-D ester, which goes into the air and can hurt other plants. So
And don't dig them because just further excites their growth habit. So avoid that for sure.
All the relatives show up.
Yeah. Solarization, maybe.
It's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
And by solarization, covering it up with an opaque, piece of plastic, cardboard, and something that's not going to allow them to get sun. So when they do pop out of the ground, they're not getting sun. This will take several years because of the tuber-esque thing that they have at the bottom will allow them to regrow several times, but keeping it covered.
And Rachel just wanted to give a shout out to the Cincinnati Nature Center. She said that they have really nice gardens for ideas.
Absolutely.
We got a question from Tom. He wants to get rid of honeysuckle, another one of your invasive species, honeysuckle in the wooded areas, and replace with ground cover. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I would say start very soon with cutting it. If the stems are very large, cut it off near the ground, and then you can immediately apply a concentrated form of Roundup to that stump. Now, that will, and when I say immediately, I mean cut and apply immediately. If there are smaller plants, once again, they respond very well to Roundup. And, of course, you'll be targeting the green. If you do cut them off, now sometimes people will do this. It works fairly well, but it may take a little bit longer. You cut them, allow them to regrow because the glyphosate, the active ingredient Roundup, has to be taken through green structures like leaves. So let it regrow. Then you have a target there. I've heard you actually say that, Sarah. I'm borrowing it from you. She's the smart one here.
Well, let's follow up on that because Claire expressed some concern that we've mentioned Roundup on the show. She says it's banned in several countries. Are there safer natural options?
Not for honeysuckle.
I hate to say it. Actually, there are herbicides that are, there are herbicides that will work. Homeowners very often can't buy those. So you might say that the riskier herbicides, now there are some brush killers, but once again, you know, they last longer. I understand the concern, but sometimes we have to weigh, okay, so what's the outcome? So for example, if you go into the garden center, you may find these brush killers. Take a look at the label to see how long that active ingredient is active. Some are active for 12 months. So if you want to come along and replant something, that residue will be active, killing whatever you want to replant. So those herbicides are used for things like driveways or places you don't want to have weeds for an extended period of time. So we have mentioned Roundup because it's such an effective tool. Though, and I want to stress this once again, be careful with any pesticide. You know, use protective gear. And then I can't believe my colleagues and I mean, we preach this all the time. Read and follow the label directions.
Yeah, more concentration doesn't equal exactly. higher potency. Yeah. Exactly. So really, you're negatively affecting yourself when you're applying it because it's going to be more harsh on you. It's not going to be any more effective on the plant. Really follow that application. And as far as honeysuckles go, we pull the small plants by the roots the best we can. Anything large, we will actually will cut down, like Dave said. And then for those of you that are worried about Roundup, you're not Dave, you're Joe. I'm used to having Dave here.
All right, that's right. He's smarter anyway.
We actually cut the large trunks off, and we will actually paint the Roundup on the stem immediately after. And that will pull it down in the root system. That way you're not spraying a broad area and killing everything. It's very poignant. You're only killing that honeysuckle. So if you're worried about the use of Roundup, you might try that method. And as for a ground cover, I don't really love to see ground covers in wooded areas.
Well, a lot of times your native ground covers will come up. So I used to work at the Lexington Arboretum. That's where my career started, and that's one of my big projects was invasive species removal back in the woodlands area or walk across Kentucky, and the native trilliums came back, the native wild, so they are there dormant waiting for sunshine. So you'll be surprised. You'll have a lot of gifts that will be given to you. And one other tool that we used during that whole eradication of honeysuckle, and I've mentioned it on the show before, is the weed wrench. Yes. I love that wrench.
Yeah.
It is kind of difficult to find, but if you can find one, it's worth it. And it helps reduce compaction in your woodland area or in your garden. So again, weed wrench.
Okay, we got about a minute left. Gigi called. She wants to know how to keep daylilies blooming. She has tried deadheading with no luck. Now, I may have the wrong idea about what deadheading is. So what is that?
Deadheading is just cutting off the dead flower. Once it's kind of the petals have dropped, cutting that off, and it sends sugars back down in the root system, which makes the plant healthier overall. As far as keeping them blooming, I mean, they have a relatively short bloom time anywho. I think deadheading them and cutting the foliage back in the fall, once the plants have turned yellow, I think is the best way for the next year. I don't know how to keep
them. Fertilize them as well for the following year. So fertilizing, you know, during bloom stage is not going to be as beneficial. But again, as we've discussed previously, is always thinking next year or the years to come. Mm-hmm. So plan, our planner who called earlier, plan for, you know, the future. And so that would be helpful. But, you know, when fertilizing, it's not just a one-time thing. Make sure that you keep that in your management plan in your landscape.
Great advice. You guys were full of great advice today. We got some questions that we didn't get to. It's like Julianne in Covington wants to start gardening for the first time, wants to know where to start.
Master gardeners.
So we'll have some links to your websites at WVXU.org for people whose questions did not get answered. Beth has some daffodil problems. So all of you listen, thank you for listening. And if we didn't get your question addressed on air, go to WVXU.org, click on Cincinnati Edition, and you'll find links to all of these very helpful people whom I'm sure will be happy to help you offline.
Of course.
So thank you, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, Ohio State University Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology, and Ohio State Extension Agent for Hamilton County Joe Boggs. This was fun. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.